a lot of American citizens and wants to remove them from circulation. Trust. God wants your trust. He's a jealous God. He will not share it with Pharaoh. No matter what color Pharaoh is, God is God. And above him there is no other. We've got a hard and heart decision to make, my friends, here in this country and around the world. Will we trust God or government? Will we trust the potentate of our souls or Pharaoh? I've written a book called Out of Egypt. It's an end time message to the end time church, building end time trust for end time trials. Your gift of $17 or more to Save America Ministries will put Out of Egypt in your hands. It's a life changing book. Call us 1-800-SAVE-USA. You can get it on our website, saveus.org. Saveus.org, Out of Egypt. Become a partner. Send your gifts by faith to Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners.
Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you that the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of Dr. William P. Grady, and we're going to be talking about his book, How Satan Turned America Against God. How Satan Turned America Against God. And of course, the cover of the book has a picture of the Capitol building with smoke billowing out of the windows under the dome. Obviously, it foretells the destruction of America. And it's a fascinating book, and certainly Dr. Grady has been certainly an evangelist. He's taught at the university level theology, and he's been a pastor. But this book really is a magnificent book. I've learned a lot from reading it, and I think that anybody who reads it will. And, of course, we had a program the other evening with a Jewish convert, a Messianic Jew, and some woman called in, a very nice lady, but she said, you know, we keep hearing over and over again that these are the latter days, but they've been saying this for hundreds of years. Why is today different than any time before? How do we know that these really are the latter days? And Eliyahu Ben David, who is the guest, said, because of the Jews. And, of course, that is the key to everything, and certainly that's the key to so much of what Dr. Grady talks about. Good evening. Thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
Glad to be here, Dr. Stan.
Well, I want you just to sort of pick up the story, because, of course, you began talking about already the history of the Jews, how already the whole history, not only of Palestine, but the history of the world centers around the Jews and God's promise to the Jews, and how, for one whatever reason it is, God made a promise to them 4,000 years ago that seems to be coming to its fulfillment today, and they play a pivotal part in the history, certainly of the world, and the history of America. So you pick up the story. You've done a magnificent job. It's a beautiful book.
Well, thank you, and I very much appreciate the opportunity to be on your program. I know you've been at this an awfully long time, and I hope everything I say will just be good for your program and your listeners. I would say, if I were to summarize the thesis of the book, I would say this. America shows up on the stage of nations 5,800 years after the Garden of Eden. So you could call America Johnny-come-lately a nation. And then, but less than 50 years later, we have human beings traveling on the railroads, known as the Iron Horse, and which is the first time since the Garden of Eden that they're traveling faster than 20 to 25 miles a day on the back of a beast of burden. The Kit Carson and the Pony Express riders couldn't travel any faster than Cain and Abel could. And people don't get this. And then 100 years after that, Americans break the sound barrier on the salt flats. And less than 50 years after that, Americans land on the moon. I worked for British Airways in the 1970s, and we had the Concorde fly to London in 3 hours. And all this time, America has led the world in every conceivable category. So that's quite a scenario, and there must be a cause and effect for that. The answer to that lady's question about people have always thought during the last days, I believe there's an underrated prophecy in Daniel chapter 12, verse 4, and but thou, O Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book even to the time of the end. Many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. So transportation and knowledge are given as two end-day signs that people never think about.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. Pick up the story there, because, of course, you know, really, it's very hard for people to realize that, you know, suddenly 125, 130 years ago, the primary means of transportation was still the horse, and all the amazing things that have happened since then. You go right ahead.
Oh, my. When John Adams left Massachusetts to go to Philadelphia for the Continental Congress, that was the first time he'd ever been out of the state of Massachusetts, and we don't appreciate that. And you get transportation and knowledge, and you put it together, and you have the information highway. And so America has these unique privileges because they have unique religious liberties. And all of this connects to the Jew, and people really put it together, I'm afraid, and they miss it. John Clark was the pastor of the Baptist Church in Newport, Rhode Island, First Baptist Church in America. He founded Portsmouth, Rhode Island, first. And if you go there to this day, there's a street sign that says Birthplace of American Democracy. So the Baptists planted something called a Newport Compact, at Portsmouth Compact, when they landed, giving full religious liberty and liberty of conscience. And this was unlike the other colonies. And then 12 years later, the charter from England came in, the 1663 charter, because Pastor Clark spent 12 years lobbying for it. And that gave Rhode Island their unique religious liberties. And the next generation, you had the pastors in Virginia, the Baptist pastors that were being locked up all over the state of Virginia for preaching without a license. They're preaching through the bars on the windows on Sunday morning to the congregation standing out in the courtyard. Patrick Henry and James Madison and Thomas Jefferson defended these men. And that results in the Virginia Statute of Religious Liberty, penned by Jefferson and Madison, based on all the persecution of these Baptist pastors. And then that's the pattern that eventually develops into the Bill of Rights. And all that to say this, America became the first real place on earth where you could believe anything you want to believe without persecution. And who took better opportunity for that haven than the Jew? And that Jew, the second Jewish migration to America out of Barbados is a Jewish colony that lands in Newport after in the 1650s, after one had gone to New York first. And the New York congregation built a synagogue, and then it was burned down, or it burned down. And then the Newport congregation built their synagogue, and it's the Toro Synagogue, and it still stands to this day. So it's the amazing photograph. It's in my book. You can take a picture of the Toro Synagogue from the front of the synagogue. And in the background...
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Certainly, Dr. Grady is just talking about the background of America, and certainly founded here, you know, by deeply religious people. It had certainly was the first country on earth, really, to establish a situation where people could come and believe whatever they wanted to. And he makes the very profound point in his book that America was, in history, was created by God for two purposes. One was to give the Jewish people a refuge, some place they could come and where they would not be necessarily persecuted. Oh, there'd be some persecution, but it would not be an official policy. And the other, of course, was that America was to play an important part in the establishment of the State of Israel, which was the fulfillment of the ancient prophecies that in the latter days why the children of Israel would return to the land. So go right ahead.
Well, the interesting thing, Dr. Monteith, is if you photograph the front of the Toral Synagogue, which is the oldest standing synagogue in America, in the background is the church steeple from the John Clark Memorial Baptist Church, the oldest Baptist church in America, still functioning as a congregation. And there's an American flag flying on the property of the synagogue to make the full connection. It's a beautiful picture. And so you have the, there's an article that came out in the Jewish Forward, the oldest Jewish newspaper in America, came out a month after my book was published, and it put everything into perspective. It was an article about Emma Lazarus, who wrote the words that, of course, are on the Statue of Liberty. And she was a Jewish lady and died of cancer at about 35, 36 years of age. But in this long article, there's one amazing statement that puts it all in perspective. It says, in her early work, Lazarus worried that the United States had no past and the Jews had no future. She came to resolve this dilemma by claiming that it was the singular destiny of the United States to secure the fate of the Jews. I think that's so amazing, and the only thing any more profound than that was a statement I've heard from a rabbi once. America's Bible Belt became Israel's safety belt. And I think that's a pretty good way of summing it all up.
I think that's something that most people never stop and think of, but what is happening in Israel and what has happened in Israel is pivotal to an understanding of what's happening to America. America, I believe, has been blessed because we've blessed the Jews. As America turns against the Jews, and there has tremendous pressure being put on Israel to make all sorts of concessions, and of course you spend a good deal of time dealing with John McTiernan's book, Israel, Curse or Blessing, or Blessing or Curse. You know, we've had John on many times, and I was just so glad to see you. What went into some of the amazing relationships between America taking action to force Israel to make concessions, to give up land or to surrender its sovereignty, and then these terrible, terrible storms or earthquakes or things would happen, and if it happened once or twice or three or four times, but it's a consistent pattern that is really simply beyond the realm of chance.
Well, the trace is back as recently as last week, the beginning of this week, Monday and Tuesday. Obama and the company are putting all the pressure on Netanyahu, and the ABC commentator interviewing him, Charlie, what's his name there, and ABC had him pinned down about settlements. And in the meantime, Georgia's inundated with water. Roller coasters are almost completely underwater outside of Atlanta. And I thought to myself, the Lord sometimes picks the target's location as well as just the country in general. And Brzezinski was yelling about Zbigniew Brzezinski, Carter's former national security advisor, is yelling about the shooting down Israeli planes if they choose to bomb Iran. And Carter, of course, last week started all the talk about the racist resistance to Obama from white Southerners and all this mess. And Carter's never been any friend to the Jew. So I figured, I guess Georgia was the appropriate target for for the week.
Well, it's an amazing concept, and yet, of course, if you're a believer, it's not hard to believe at all. In fact, it's sort of thrilling in many ways, even though there's a lot of suffering. But it's thrilling to realize that God still does work in the affairs of men.
Well, you said believers, and that's true. But, you know, I was at the Christian Booksellers Convention in 2005 in Denver, and there was a USA Today reporter that was interviewing all the people, as many as he could get in 4 days, 400 booths, 10,000 people. And he came by my booth, and he was an unsaved Catholic man. And I got to showing him the material in the first chapter, and his eyes got like half dollars. The following Friday, the weekend edition of USA Today came out, and he only printed three partial interviews out of the dozens and dozens. He took over 4 days. And I was given one of those three slots, for which I was very thankful for the Lord. And actually, since that time, if you go to the first chapter of my book, the Lord literally gave me the privilege of predicting Hurricane Katrina 5 months before it happened without even realizing it at the time. The conclusion of the chapter one that you're referring to that deals with all this weather phenomenon says, quote, "If you're still undecided about standing with the Lord, just start watching the Weather Channel before retiring each night. Then pull those covers snugly against your chin. You won't have to worry about anything stirring out there in the dark until the next mile marker is reached on the roadmap to peace, nighty night." And 5 months later, of course, the Gaza expulsion of those 8,000 Jews and out of Gush Katif, as McTiernan points out, or his partner there in the subsequent book, the very day that the last Gaza resident was evicted, Tropical Depression 9, maybe, is what it was that formed, which became Katrina. So 2 weeks later, they're showing remnants of the 8,000 Jews kicked out of Gaza wandering through the lobbies of hotels in Haifa and Tel Aviv with their coupons from the government for a free week stay. The same CNN news cameras the same day are showing remnants of the 800,000 Americans out of a house, you know, in water up to their waist, waving bedsheets.
And, you know, it's really fascinating. It really has to do with your worldview. The atheist, the non-believer, will say, well, it's simply just coincidence. I mean, there are always storms, there are always things happening. The Christian looks at it and says, isn't it amazing to see how God works in the affairs of men?
Oh, yeah. And Dr. Stan, as much work as you do with people, as folks, especially folks that want to call in. And, by the way, I was saved in 1974. Through the radio ministry directly. That's exactly how I was saved, of the Marcus McBaptist Church outside of Philadelphia. So I appreciate the radio ministry. But, of course, today is a talking head society, and everybody wants to argue about everything. And an old preacher one time showed me Romans chapter 1, where it lists all these different sins. And right next to the sin of murder is the sin of debate. And in verse 3, it says, Jesus Christ declared to be the Son of God. And it said, you're a lot better off declaring the truth than trying to debate it all the time. And so, the heathen world doesn't want to hear the truth, no matter how we throw it at them sometimes. So we just try to reinforce that remnant, I guess.
All we can do is talk, but what a wonderful opportunity to have a microphone. And you never know who's out there listening. I met James Kennedy one time, Corridge Baptist Church, and he was saved by a radio ministry. Somebody turned his alarm radio to the wrong channel, and he heard Barnhouse one morning. In fact, he woke up with Dr. Barnhouse shouting into the radio, "If you were to die tomorrow, where would you spend eternity?" He had no idea where the voice came from. It's a wonderful story, and of course, he had a tremendous impact. So, I'm not a minister at all, as I'm not a theologian. I'm simply a recorder of history and somebody who feels that I have an opportunity to have a ministry. But they don't want to hear about me; they want to hear about you and this wonderful story you have about how Satan turned America against God. So, you pick up the story. You were talking about, of course, how certainly God does interfere in the affairs of men, how we see it manifest in so many ways. But, of course, what you have talked about how America already was blessed because we gave the Jews a place to live and to prosper, and we were instrumental initially in the formation of the State of Israel, but increasingly we see, of course, the America is turning again. Our leaders, the people who really control our country, are already intent upon destroying the State of Israel, and how God is, of course, going to withdraw his blessing from America. But you go ahead.
Well, you're right about that, and you know, we're not novices. I'm sure I know you're not, and I've been to Israel 4 times, and I'm sure you know as much or more as I do about the state of the country today. There's a lot of corruption in Israel politically. The last prime minister is under indictment. There's rampant immorality, homosexuality, and so we're not naive thinking it's heaven on earth at this time. It's not. And the Jews have been under the punishment of their God for 2,000 years. And I wish it wasn't that so, but it is. But God is going to go back to dealing with his people and purify them through much bloodshed yet to come. Worst war we've ever could even imagine is still up in front of us. And I think we're in that transition, times of the Gentiles having come to an end, and we're transitioning out. Like in the book of Esther, when Vashti, the Gentile queen, refuses all of a sudden to obey her husband, and the king replaces her with a Jewish bride, Esther. And that's a transition book, Esther, in type in the Old Testament, showing the rapture generation, that the Gentile bride is no longer obedient to her groom. And this is the unfortunate apostasy among Christian people that the Bible predicted would come at the last days. The time will come when they will not endorse sound doctrine, Paul wrote. And I believe that's just Carrie Prejean out here in her bikini wandering around defending biblical morality and the family, and this Miss California nonsense. And there are so many Christians excited about her standing for the Lord in her bikini on a major nationwide television broadcast. That's the mess we're in today.
I know, well, I believe the only way to get the attention, people's attention, is terrible suffering, and I believe that lies ahead, not only for the people in Israel, but for the people right here in America. We'll be back in just a moment with Pastor William Grady. Pick up the story there.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verki water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verki water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Very well be conspiracies, a lot of strange things going on, but go right ahead with your thought.
Well, the point is, just because they can get some radical conspiracy viewpoints, the Christians shouldn't be chased away from the study of conspiracy history because of that, but they should be able to separate fact from fiction, which I try to do in my book. But even more of an imperative than that is for the secular conspiracy-minded people to get burdened and realize that there's a lot of patriotic people in hell. Imagine being a patriot and a right-winger and dying and meeting Karl Marx in hell and spending the rest of eternity in hell with them because, you know, they didn't have time for the Bible and the God of America's founding fathers. And so, you know, the two have to get together. And I'll give you an illustration about how the Bible can really shed a lot of light on conspiracy theory. Talking to my wife about the Twin Towers and what caused them to fall, and there's so many viewpoints on it, and I cover that in a 100-page chapter in my book. But my wife gave an old-fashioned viewpoint. She said, you know, Bill, probably the Lord just allowed the devil to knock both of those things down because, you know, God has to permit everything that happens anyway, and he's the Apollyon, the great destroyer, and she put two thumbs up and said, the Lord probably just let the devil bring both towers down, God's not in the mood of blessing America these days, so a lot of what goes on is judgment that God allows. And anyways, as saying that, I got into my Bible the next morning just by schedule. I was reading in the first chapter of Job, and I read in verse 19, and I found the first implosion in the Bible that resulted in fatalities. And Job's children were killed when a building was brought down by Satan. And behold, there came a great wind from the wilderness and smote the four corners of the house, and it fell upon the young men, and they are dead. And the thing the Lord showed me as soon as I read that verse, he said, look at the address. It's Job 119. So forget about the Hebrew codes. Look at the English codes. That's Job 119. You turn those numbers around backwards, and that's 911. And that was just a little devotional perk that made my day and to show me how the... There's so much in that Bible that can never be extracted.
Well, I'm certain that Satan allowed this to happen. I believe that there was a conspiracy, but I believe there is a satanic conspiracy already that is leading America, indeed the whole world, to destruction. And God is playing this thing out. But, of course, Satan thinks he's in charge. I believe that certainly what's happening today, the anti-Semitism we see, is being fomented by people who are followers of Satan. I believe we can see Satan's influence in every aspect of what's going on today. And why I do what I do is to try to make people understand there really are spiritual forces behind what's going on. And hopefully they'll start looking for answers, and they're not going to find them in politics. They're going to find the answers in the Holy Scriptures. But you go right ahead.
You're right about that. Dr. Stan, Christian, you know, has the peace of God that passeth all understanding. The Bible says, let not your heart be troubled. And God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of peace and of love and of a sound mind. So things can be rough outside, but on the inside, the Christian can have that peace. And one of the big blessings the Lord gave me was when I studied the life of John Birch and Larry McDonald. And I found a very interesting study on those men. They were both Christians. They were both from Georgia. They were both patriots. and they both did double duty, John as a missionary spy, and Larry as a physician and a congressman. I know you know all about this, but for the listeners that might not know. And then they were both murdered by the communists. John by Chinese communists, and McDonald by the Soviets. And they were both, here's the sad part, both abandoned by their own governments, cover-up of their deaths, and they were both vilified, you know, by the system subsequent to that. That's very sad. They were great Christians that tried to do something for America's good. Well, God knows about those things, and he doesn't let that stuff go unanswered. And I found some very unusual things. First of all, Kathy McDonald, she tried to get Ronald Reagan to speak at Larry's memorial service in Washington, D.C., and Reagan declined to speak. He declined to come, and he declined to send anybody in an official capacity. And it was a very egregious threefold snub. And the one of the statements given in one of the biographies about this, Reagan's biographer, said he was warned that there'd be 4,000 blue-collar fundamentalist-type worshippers at that memorial service, and he ought to stay away. Well, I found it very interesting, Dr. Stan, that you don't snub a widow. She's a very important person in the scriptures, you know. I found the date of that memorial service most intriguing. It was September the 11th, 1983.
Well, sometimes you begin seeing these things, they're just much more than coincidence. We'll be right back. Well, we play this at the break here at this time, but giving a remembrance of things past. At one time, I did believe that God did bless America. I see very little reason why God should bless America today. And short of a great revival, which I don't foresee coming, why, of course, we are in for very difficult times. But you go ahead and pick up the story.
Well, Dr. Stan, I remember when I worked at the Philadelphia airport when I was first saved, and I worked for British Airways. And we used to give Philadelphia Flyers tickets out to our customers. And I remember when the Flyers won the Stanley Cup, I think it was 1975, I forget, Chicago or Montreal, I forget who they beat. But my wife and I went to the seventh game of that, the fifth game where they won the cup, and Kate Smith came out and sang God Bless America live, and we still remember that. But back to this thing about Birch and McDonald, kind of like God's two olive trees. There's an interesting story about how God can look after us, and we don't have to be paranoid about the days in which we're living. When John Birch was in China, he was there with Oscar Wells, his partner, both men graduate from J. Frank Norris School in Texas. Both Baptist missionaries. Oscar Wells married a lady named Myrtle, and he and Myrtle had a baby named Shannon. John Birch was single. John Birch, Oscar Wells and his wife and the baby get captured by the Japanese, and John Birch stays on the run until he's murdered 10 days after the war ends. But Oscar Wells and the baby and his wife are in a POW camp. He gets down to about 70 pounds, and he's the cook. It was very deplorable. How that baby survived was an absolute miracle. Nobody could figure it out. But to show you how God works, both of these men murdered by the communists. But way back in 19, I forget the year, you had a very unusual thing. You had a lady named Shannon, of all things, who turned out to be the astronaut, Shannon Lucid, who turned out to be the astronaut that had the most time in space. She was in the Russian Mir space station, floating around for 200-some-odd days. And she had four shuttle missions. She held the record 233 days in space. This was 1996. With two Russian cosmonauts. And her resume made both of those cosmonauts look like Sunday school teachers.
You hold that thought for just a moment. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Pastor Reverend Dr. William Grady, and we're talking about his book, How Satan Turned America Against God. But before we go on, we're talking about a Russian astronaut, a woman astronaut who really was a remarkable woman. But before we go on, would you like to get out your webpage and tell people how to get your book? Because usually I get so involved in our conversations, I sort of forget to get the information out. And so why don't you at least tell people how the book is available and if they'd like more information about your ministry?
Sure. My book could be ordered off my website, which is GradyPublications.com, GradyPublications.com. I have a church that I pastor in the Flint, Michigan area called Macedonia Baptist Church, which is located at 7025 Miller Road in Swartz Creek. And I can leave a phone number if someone wants to reach us, which is 810-630-1611.
And, could you give that one more time? Because you always have to give your telephone number twice on my program. My listeners can't remember it the first time, and neither can I, so go ahead.
Sure, it's Swartz Creek, Michigan, Macedonia Baptist Church, 810-630-1611.
All right, fine. And, Chris, we do have a lot of listeners right there in Flint, Michigan, so go right ahead.
Sure. Well, the interesting thing, Dr. Stan, is that this American astronaut who holds the record of the most time in space, at least at that time, four shuttle missions, and a very accomplished professional, is in this Russian space station, Mir, with these two cosmonauts. And of all things, to show you, the way the Lord would show you that, you know, we don't have to worry about the Putin and the communists and all the, you know, the agents of Satan in the last days, because that very accomplished American astronaut just happened to be that little baby from the POW camp. And the Lord took that little baby from John Birch and Oscar Wells' little circle of missionaries for the Lord in the middle of all that turmoil, took her out of that POW camp in World War II and put her into the record books of NASA to show you that, like the Mahalia Jackson used to sing, he's got the little bit of baby in his hands. And the Lord can take care of us just like he did that little baby.
Well, I think we're increasingly going to have to learn to rely upon the Lord as times get bad. We ought to make all of our preparations and physical preparations, but I think the spiritual preparation for what lies ahead is certainly the most important. You go right ahead.
Well, I think you're definitely right about that. And to try to have a real good spiritual way of looking at this, prepare for what is coming. A long time ago, I heard a preacher give us a study on Ezekiel chapter 9. And in Ezekiel 9, there's only 11 verses in the chapter, it talks about the Lord sending destruction on Jerusalem himself toward the end of the tribulation period. And he has these five angels, and four of them have slaughter weapons in their hand. Well, they all have slaughter weapons in their hand. But before they come down to rain judgment on Jerusalem itself, he sends one angel down first with an inkhorn, like pen and ink. And he tells them to mark the foreheads of any of the Jews who are sighing and crying for the sins of their land. And then when the angel goes down and does that, and he's all finished, he comes back and tells the Lord, I've done what you've commanded. Then the Lord sends the other four down with their destroying slaughter weapons and is commanded to kill every Jew except the Jews that have that mark on their head. And it's an incredible truth because God's not obligated to treat the church age like he's going to treat tribulation people, but the principle is there. If God is going to be moved to spare people at the end of the tribulation period for being like David, having a heart like he has, and crying for the sins of the nation, I guess there's no better training that you could give your children in these last days to carry a great burden for what's going on, the sin in our land. And it just might be that the Lord would, if someone is going to be spared, you know, this side of the rapture. I'm a rapture person. But, you know, I say it often, I'm not worried about the eruption of the Lamb in the tribulation period because of that interruption of the rapture. Praise the Lord for that. But I don't know if there'll be any amount of disruption this side of the interruption because of the corruption that's been put into all these modern Bibles and into the 10-day church in so many other areas as well.
What church? What Bible do you use?
I use the King James Bible.
Okay.
And with these books that people can order on my website, I have three. The first book was a 400-page history of the King James Bible. It came out in 1993. And that's a $20 book on my website called Final Authority. Then I have a 700-page history of America, spiritual history of America, called What Hath God Wrought? A Biblical Interpretation of American History. That's $30. That's 700 pages. That came out in 1996. And the current book we're speaking about is 1,000 pages, How Satan Turned America Against God. The afterword of the book, coincidentally, Stan, was written by Sam Cohen, the father of the neutron bomb. And he's an atheist, secular atheist. He worked on the atom bomb in 1943 to 45, and he invented the neutron bomb in 1958. But he's a Jew, and he was interested in promoting my book because it's has so much to do with Israel.
Is he still alive? I thought he'd passed away.
He is. I talk to him about once a week since 2004. I mean, we're phone pals, and I'm always preaching to him, always telling him he needs to get saved. He'll be 89 years old in January, so he is really up there, and we've had a very nice friendship over the phone now for these 5-6 years, and he calls me Pastor Bill. So,
well, you know, because your book really points out so much about history, I thought one of the interesting things I'd never thought of, how certainly World War I and the Balfour Declaration, and then of course the World War II and the Holocaust, and somebody had said, and I don't recall had said it, but World War I prepared the land for the Jews.
Oh, yeah, that was Bob Jones Sr. used to say that.
And World War II prepared the Jews for the land.
Oh, yeah.
They never would have gone to... why would a Jew have wanted to go to the God-forsaken place like Israel if it had not been for the Holocaust? And so the Holocaust was allowed to happen because it served an important part in God's plan. And only by understanding God's plan can you make any sense out of so many of the things that take place today that don't appear to have any logical things. Just like today, as we're hearing all the propaganda about how terrible, you know, Iran is, and Iran is preparing nuclear weapons, and Iran is threatening the peace of the world because they have nuclear weapons. It's all right for us to have nuclear weapons and Israel to have nuclear weapons, but not Iran to have nuclear weapons. And you know very well, as you see all of this propaganda, and that's what it is, we're getting ready for a nuclear war or some sort of a war over there in the Middle East. And yet, I talk to Jewish people who say, that's madness. I mean, this is never going to take place. And I say, it may very well be madness, but I mean, it's prophesied in the scriptures. There's going to be a great war coming, whether it's now or later, I don't know. But there's going to be another nonsensical war that's going to devastate everything over there, and including Israel. But go ahead.
Well, you're certainly right. And you know, Ecclesiastes 1 says, there is no remembrance of former things. That which hath been is that which shall be. You know, things are going to end up the way they began. And they started with a bride being blinded and deceived. The Bible says Adam was not deceived. The woman being deceived was in the transgression. And Eve is the first perfect type of the church. And she gets deceived and basically rebellious and goes against God and her husband's leadership and, you know, takes that fruit. And that's how the church age is going to end, with a bunch of, with a bride, the bride of Christ, being blind, like Laodicea says you're blind, Church of Laodicea, and rebellious, like Vashti. And the time will come when they will not endorse sound doctrine. It's a terrible time for Christians to defect, but this is what's going to happen. And so we're going to end up where we started. And isn't it interesting? We started in Iraq. That's where the Garden of Eden was, you know, close to Iraq and Iran, and we're winding up at that very those very coordinates today.
As you know, Chris, we hear a lot about the world, but lots of things are going on in Africa, and lots of things are going on in India, and lots of things are going on in countries all over the world, and yet almost every day we hear something about that area in the Near East and Middle East. Why is the attention of the world focus there. I mean, we could name certainly Jerusalem, but how many people can name very many of the capitals of Africa, which have far more people there? And yet, for really hundreds of years, Jerusalem, Israel has been really the center of so much of what goes on in the world today, and people don't understand it. But, of course, it's all part of God's plan. And, of course, what's happening in America is part of God's plan as well. So pick up the story.
Well, you're right about that. I mean, in Deuteronomy 32, verse 21, you talk about a veiled prophecy laying there for end days about how God is going to basically lead America will desert Israel in the last days. You said that's happening, and it is. And the most amazing scripture, it says, God says, they have moved me to jealousy with that which is not God, and that's a Jew today, secularism. You know, so many of the Jews in Israel today, I don't care about giving up the land for some fake promises for peace. It's the religious conservative Jews that are upset, you know, and that's they're just as secular over there as we are in America, in aggregate. But then it goes on to say, they have provoked me to anger with their vanities, and I will move them to jealousy. You know, America is supposed to be Israel's ally, and we'll sell out now for oil and any number of things, and forget all about the Jew. And that's, Netanyahu and everyone realizes they're on their own now. But listen to this. This is the most amazing statement in the Old Testament for what's going on today. And I will move them to jealousy with those which are not a people. I will provoke them to anger with a foolish nation. Could you get a better description of the Palestinian nation? It doesn't even exist. It's a misnomer. It's make-believe. It's a square circle. There is no such thing as a Palestinian country. That's it right there. Moses wrote that how many thousands of years ago?
Well, you know, we can see the hand of God in that area. And first of all, the war in 1948, and then in 67 more. I mean, for all intents and purposes, Israel should have lost that war. And certainly the 73 war, if it hadn't been for God's intervention, Israel would have lost that war. And it's almost as if God has a timetable. Have you ever seen the DVD series Against All Odds, Israel Survives?
I've heard of it, but I don't know if I've seen it. But it certainly is a theme that has been reproduced many times because you just can't hardly figure it, can you?
Well, you can only figure it if you believe that God does intervene, and I believe he did intervene in both of those wars. I believe Israel is there for a purpose, but I fear for what's going to happen next. I believe that some of the Jews are going to survive, but I believe they're going to be terrible, terrible suffering. In fact, this interview we did with this gentleman named Eliyahu ben David, he was talking about going to Petra and talking to some of the Edomites there, who say they were preparing for the Jews fleeing from Jerusalem, who are going to be coming to Petra, to that valley. Whether that's where it's God has planned, I don't know. But apparently, there some of the people over there are laying in plans. The United Nations was nice enough to put in a water system there. What God has planned, we don't know, other than we're told in the scriptures that in the latter days, why the Jews are going to flee into the mountains.
Well, the Lord is certainly going to, he's going, you asked about why, Israel has such a focus, and Zechariah talks about a trembling teacup, we know that passage, and Israel invented the cell phone, among other things, and I preached in Kenya and Uganda a couple years ago, and last church I preached, and I was preaching under a tree. You can't even find a paved road over there. So, there are places that God has chosen to center his attention on, and Israel is, of course, a little piece of land the size of New Jersey that connects ancient Ham, Shem, and Japheth. And I know you know that. It's just a little land bridge between Asia, Africa, and Europe. It's the... When Paul said about the resurrection of Christ that this thing was not done in a corner, well, he was an understatement of history. Jesus walked out of that tomb. He walked out in the center of three continents. And that's where it's all going to end up. And, you mentioned about that video series. I made a mention in my book somewhere here about 1982. There was a dogfight. There were 200 Syrian MiGs engaged 130 Israeli Phantom jets over several days of aerial combat. And when it was all over, the Jewish pilots had destroyed 92 enemy aircraft, and they did not lose a single plane, kind of like the Spanish Armada. So, you know, the Lord's, you know, he sure is able.
He certainly is. In fact, the minister who really I attribute most of my knowledge to, a very kind man who used to spend a day a week with a few doctors just teaching me. He did that for about 9 years, and no pay, many of us didn't go to his church. But, I mean, one of the things he said, you know, people ask me, well, why did God choose the Jews? And he said, you know, they're recalcitrant people, they're stubborn people. I mean, it doesn't seem fair, but it doesn't matter what I think. That was God's decision, and God chose the Jews to play an important part in his plan. And as you point out so well in your book, all these other groups have disappeared. You know, the Romans and certainly the Hittites and the various groups that have occupied the Holy Land through the years and so many of the other tribal areas. But the Jews have survived for 2,000 years. And now, of course, they've returned to the Holy Land. How did that happen? And, of course, they had terrible suffering all through that time. I think as you lay out this persecution of Jews that has always been part of civilization for 2,000 years, and yet now, of course, they are returning to their homeland to play a part in God's ultimate plan. But, of course, what about America? What is going to happen to America, according to your view of things?
Well, you know, the Bible says the judgment must begin at the house of God. There's a song that says, let those refuse to sing who never knew our God. There's a scripture that says, the wicked shall be cast into hell, and all nations that forget God. And we know that unto whomsoever much is given, much shall be required. So by the end of the tribulation period, or even right into, not very far into it, a third of the population of the world is destroyed. And I'm wondering, after the rapture decimates Western civilization, or at least America, where the greater percentage of Christians are going to be, where is the first judgment really going to fall? We know that an army of 200 million Asians are going to be in Megiddo. We know that the Russian armies are coming down from the north, and I think that Britain and the United States will probably be wiped out. Canada, Australia, China, you know, the nations that have had exposure to Christianity will be the first ones to pay.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. All right, go right ahead. We have 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program, and you go right ahead.
Well, if I can wrap it up, I might want to wrap it up.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Well, you know, America is changing, but most of the changes that are taking place seem to be designed to take away our freedom. And what can you do to remedy the current situation? Well, you can become informed, and one of the best ways to become informed is to subscribe to Republic Magazine, because that magazine provides the information that's suppressed in most other news magazines. If you want to oppose the effort to establish a one-world government, if you want to preserve freedom here in the United States and throughout the world, I suggest you subscribe to Republic Magazine, and you can do that by calling 1-800-873-1620. That's 800-873-1620, or access their website at www.republicmagazine.com. That's republicmagazine.com. I suggest you get extra copies for your family and your friends.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed our interview with Pastor William Grady. It's not nice to think about terrible things happening to our country, but as we've said so often, you know, quoting Thomas Jefferson, God, who gave us life, gave us liberty, but can the liberties of a nation be secure when the conviction has been forgotten that liberty is the gift of God? I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just, and his justice cannot sleep forever. Well, I believe God is bringing his justice on this country, and I believe, of course, what we've seen now is nothing at all about compared to what lies ahead. And that's why we're going to have to learn to become reliant upon the Lord. Yes, make your plans, do everything you can to prepare for the time ahead, but also, of course, you're going to have to learn to be dependent upon God. He's the only thing that's going to see any of us through what lies ahead. Well, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners my ministry is primarily listener-supported, and if you're out there, why, we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us as we reach out on some 60 outlets every single week of one form or another, trying to bring people the truth. And then, of course, we do hope that that many of you, if you're able, will come to our all-day conference on the 25th of October. We're bringing in a great group of speakers from across the country, and we're getting a great turnout. It looks like we're going to have a full house. Hope you can make it. You're going to have reservations because we're serving lunch. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will want to get our material. I think, how do you understand what's going on today? Well, it's laid out in my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness. You can get the DVD from us. You can watch it on our website, radioliberty.com, for nothing. But even though it's just me talking for a couple of hours, why, we have a message there that's very important that begins to put things into perspective so we can see what is happening. The Brotherhood of Darkness is pivotal to understand the true nature of the spiritual battle going on, followed by our second important talk, The Forbidden Secret, and our third vitally important talk, Financial Armageddon. And put them all together and you'll know more history than other most college professors. Not that I'm a great historian, but I've read what other people have read and put it together in an understandable sequence. And how can you understand Alexander the Great? How can you understand Alexander the Great with a little band of Macedonians, 38,000 Macedonians, taking on Darius the Great over an army of 1 million people? I mean, you can't do something like that. But he did it, and he won. Well, there must have been another force there, and there was another force, and we give you the references where you find reference to the other force. And so we will tell you the things that nobody else is going to tell you about the true spiritual battle that is taking place today, both for good and for evil, and the fact that there really is a force out there that you can tap into, but you don't want to tap into that force. You want to be reliant upon our Lord. Our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Our webpage, radioliberty.com. Radioliberty.com, where you can listen to our programs 5 hours a day, at least 4 hours a day live, and 9 hours a day recorded. We do another program every morning out at American Newsnet, online.com. That's American Newsnet. American Newsnet, Newsnet, online.com, and Sydney, that's available on the Internet. That's the American Freedom Network. So we hope that you'll tell others about our program, encourage them to listen, and then join us in this truly spiritual battle for the survival of Christian civilization and the souls of men. And if we can accomplish nothing else, we can bring people to the Lord. Will America be saved? Only God knows the answer to that question. Our job is to do our best and be faithful to Him. And please pray for America. Pray for revival, but pray for Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They're my views. And, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of William Grieg, formerly a senior editor of the New American Magazine. He's a writer. He's a speaker. In fact, he's going to be speaking at our conference on the 25th of October. And then, of course, we carry his book, Liberty and Eclipse. And I'm sure he's working on 3 or 4 other books at the present time. He's a talk show host, has his own talk show. But without his background, William, how are you this evening?
I'm doing well. You sound a little bit under the weather.
No. I'm doing just fine. I'm
glad to hear that. I'd hate to hear that you were doing poorly, but it's great to be with you this evening.
All right. Well, you go right ahead.
I think that the most important thing we can talk about this evening would be this convergence of really important developments. Today has been a bit overscheduled in terms of potentially historic happenings. The one that everybody's been paying attention to, of course, the G20 summit in Pittsburgh, which we had teased a couple of weeks ago as being a very significant meeting. The G20 is now becoming the global economic presidium in the same sense that the Politburo, if you will, of the Soviet Union or of Communist China was the presidium for a collectivist economic and political system within the borders of those countries. We're talking about the idea of a global economic collective, a global economic Soviet being created here. If anybody has read the communique, it's a 12-page, densely written, boilerplate-heavy extrusion that was the official document or manifesto to come out of this G20 summit. It is larded with expressions that resonate with the idea of global economic collectivism. And while this, of course, was being examined, and they never really examine these things in depth at the meetings, all the real business takes place before the meetings. The meetings are sort of a ritual, empty ceremonial, to accompany the policy decisions that have been made beforehand at these international forums, of which I've attended, you know, more than a dozen. But while this was going on, while the world leaders, as they called themselves, were going through the kabuki theater of diplomacy out in the streets of Pittsburgh, we saw another really bracing demonstration of the increasingly militarized and federalized law enforcement or homeland security apparatus that now is in full operation here in this country, albeit in limited application. You had situations where there may have been some kind of a dialectic going on between black bloc-type anarchist protesters. Movements of that sort are always infiltrated. Some of them are actually controlled by agents provocateur, but they're always infiltrated by informants. That's something that goes without saying for those who've actually read the studies of the subject. But you may have had a dialectic going on between some elements, the most radical elements of the protest gathering, and on the other hand, some of the more militant elements with the police. The point is that you had peaceful protests, street demonstrations, that were broken up with the use of crowd control and personnel control tactics right out of Baghdad, here in the streets of Pittsburgh. So you really had a full sample, a core sample, if you will, by way of a preview of the world that our supposed rulers are making for us. It wasn't a pretty sight.
Well, of course, prototype, of course, was the battle in Seattle. We've got a wonderful four-tape set on that. All carefully staged. A lot of the people there, very sincere, not realizing they were being manipulated. And, of course, the police are manipulated. The people are manipulated. Everything is this carefully staged and orchestrated, exactly as inside it's all orchestrated, so outside it's orchestrated. You better be quiet. Don't object to what the ruling elite are doing. We go right ahead and pick up the story.
Yes, among the methods that were used here by the riot police, working, and this is the really important point I'd like to make, working in overt collaboration with the military, which, of course, is a violation of Pacta Comitatus. It is illegal for the military to be involved in routine law enforcement in the continental United States, anywhere where you have a potential conflict between the civilian population of this country and the military. The military cannot have an overt law enforcement role, yet they were there as a very conspicuous presence in a hands-on capacity in Pittsburgh. The police were using the expanded arsenal of what are called non-lethal tools or non-lethal weapons or devices, including beanbag rounds, rubber bullets. Rubber bullets, of course, are frequently lethal, at least the variety that have been used in such places as Northern Ireland and the West Bank. They were using smoke and tear gas and pepper spray. They're using flash bang grenades. A flash bang round, of course, is meant to disorient the subject. But a flashbang round can also be lethal if it hits somebody in the face, if it hits somebody in vulnerable anatomy. A flashbang round can be lethal. And then the new and really disturbing technology unveiled in Pittsburgh was the use of an incapacitating sound weapon that literally disorients people through the use of, if anybody has listened to or seen the film clips on the internet, through the use of a piercing electronic ululation, which is incredibly painful. It's called non-lethal, but of course this is an instrument of pain compliance. And these were all being deployed in preemptive fashion in Pittsburgh. You did not have a battle in Seattle type rampage. There were, from what I've been able to read and what I've been able to confirm with some people who are closer to the story than myself, I'm talking to you from Idaho, and I'm really at the mercy of what I read in the wire services and also what sources I can develop. You didn't have a situation like in Seattle where you had rampages with people throwing chairs and other objects through the windows of storefronts of various businesses. You may have had limited instances of property damage, but for the most part, you're dealing here with peaceful assemblies of people. They weren't authorized by the city government, but they are authorized in principle on the basis of the rights that are protected by the Constitution. And there was that memorable clip that is available once again on the Internet, a standoff between stormtrooper-outfitted riot police who looked like some dystopian nightmare out of science fiction.
Sort of like Darth Vader, I love
that. Yeah, very much so. They're in full Darth Vader regalia, facing off with protesters who look at them with a sort of puzzled and dreadful anticipation.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment with William Grigg. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and of course, William is talking about the Darth Vader confrontation between the Darth Vader police and riot police, and certainly the protesters there in Pittsburgh, and then, of course, the fact the military was there in violation of the Posse Comitatus Act. But our leaders don't believe in the Constitution. They hate the Constitution and the use of the so-called the sound waves, these new means of piercing sound that will disable people and pepper spray and smoke and flash bang grenades and all these things for a non-confrontational demonstration. What they're saying is when the elite meet, why you are need to flee. You are not to be here. You are not to object because there is a ruling elite that rules the world. And when they're holding meetings, we don't want you to be seen or heard. But go right ahead.
That's exactly right. This is something that people have to understand, is that where the policy decisions are worked out in the international realm, where there's actual substantive matters of policy being discussed, the way that law enforcement, Homeland Security personnel are programmed to operate is to ensure that these deliberations of the ruling elite are untainted by any access on the part of the public, on the part of the mundanes, the hoi polloi, the common people. And so you have a situation where the full might, the full punitive weight of the Homeland Security apparatus in this country was being used in order to enforce this segregation through which the public is hermetically sealed from the people who are our rulers. And of course now once we have in the G20 this new collective apparatus of economic control that is giving itself all kinds of staggering powers to run the economy and to run, this is what I find really interesting, to coordinate the use of inflation as a way of supposedly fighting the economic downturn. I don't think that there has ever been in human history a case where the entire world, or most of the world, most of the developed world and the developing world here, would be under the same regime of monetary inflation. I don't think that's ever happened before. And what they're ensuring by this intervention, of course, is that we're going to have a long, deep, protracted, painful, and potentially transformative global depression. But they want to make sure that there's a sense of equity in misery, that everybody is on the same page, that these decisions and policies are harmonized to where that you have a certain uniformity of suffering. And that's basically what they're preparing for. Now, what happened in the streets of Pittsburgh is that there are people along a spectrum of concern and in the informed understanding of what's going on. Some of them may have understood what the G20 meeting was really all about. Some people are engaged in what I used to call recreational idealism. It's fun to confront people in the streets if you're a young person of a certain romantic inclination. There are others who were brought to the streets by sort of retread popular front politics. They were chanting the same nursery rhyme slogans, the same insipid mantras that have been chanted by left-wing protesters for decades. But the point is that this was a non-confrontational, non-violent protest, and yet it was treated like a threat to national security, and military means were used to break it up. A wire service story I'm looking at here talks about the fact that the plaza where this protest was going on is a quarter mile from the building where the G20 leaders were meeting. The dignitaries were gone by the time police declared the gathering illegal and fired canisters of pepper spray and smoke. They no longer really had a reason to be aggressive in dealing with a crowd. I think they were just demonstrating their control and making people submit. Legal observers at the gathering saw police surrounding, chasing, and arresting students who weren't involved in the protest. Franklin Smith, 58, a mental health care manager who was protesting at Shankly Plaza said police tackled him. He, the policeman, threw me to the ground. He kept smashing my face into the ground. Then about two or three other cops came over. They jumped on me, said Smith, who was released from the city jail around 7 a.m. Friday and went straight to the ER for treatment of a badly bruised face. They kept him in jail overnight, in other words, with these injuries that were the result of being gang-tackled and having his face repeatedly smashed into the concrete, into the pavement. A video posted on YouTube Friday shows a group of Pitt students briefly trapped on the outdoor stairwell of a campus building, evidently exposed to the gaseous pepper spray and unable to move because riot police were blocking the bottom and the top of the stairs. The students had been standing on a second-floor balcony observing the clash between police and protesters on the street below. Around the same time, a few blocks away, windows were smashed at some 10 businesses. That's the property damage I referred to. Police made 42 arrests near the university, but it wasn't clear if they caught any of the vandals. I'd be willing to bet they didn't. I'd be willing to bet, first of all, that if you're dealing with actual vandals, they were certainly too slippery and too experienced to be caught. And secondly, if you're dealing with provocateurs, there's no reason for the police to catch them. They would be working on the same side. Those are the two possibilities. I don't know which is the more probable. The point that I want to emphasize here is the idea of bottlenecking these students in an enclosed area. Students who are not part of the protest, and yet hitting them with this incapacitating pepper spray. Pepper spray, of course, is a weapon that takes your breath away. It incapacitates you and makes it impossible to breathe efficiently. And, of course, it's much more intense than, from what I understand, than your typical tear gas. And it defies understanding if the idea was to maintain public order suitable to a public meeting of dignitaries from abroad, why they would go out of the way to create this type of a situation unless they were trying to make some kind of a message or send some kind of a message.
But that's what they do. I mean, yes. If you go back and you study the Vietnam War, many times the police were given orders to actually precipitate violent confrontations so that the demonstrators would react. And certainly remember Kent State, a perfect example of something that was obviously staged for its psychological impact on the entire nation. And I will tell you that I got a number of calls on the day of the demonstrations there, and people were really so upset by what they'd seen on the Internet, about the mistreatment of the demonstrators and the presence of the troops. I think this is all psychologically designed for its impact on the American people.
Well, it certainly does have an impact in terms of forming our perceptions as to what is permissible. And for those of us who have been warning about the advent of a militarized police state, it's meant to have the impact, I believe, of giving us a sense that it's a fait accompli and any kind of resistance would really be pointless. I don't happen to agree with that. I think it's useful to see these things demonstrated in the sense of illustrating how bad things have gotten and hopefully provoking a histaminic reaction on the part of those of us who are allergic to tyranny. I'd like to think that there's a large cohort of people in this country who meet that description. The thing that I want to point out here is that this is perfectly in keeping with what happened at the Republican National Convention last year in Minneapolis-St. Paul and what happened at the Democratic National Convention in Denver. You had a situation in which this was treated as a military operation with National Guard elements working literally arm-in-arm with local law enforcement for the purpose of containing and turning back peaceful protests. There was an incident in Minneapolis, St. Paul, in which everybody in a public park was put under arrest by riot police. If you take a look at the video, these people are placidly enjoying a bright, late summer day. It was either the last of August or the beginning of September. And the police showed up and simply arrested everybody in a given vicinity. So it's the sort of thing that happened with the bottleneck once again here in Pittsburgh, where people were observers and they were treated as if they were subjects to some kind of a maneuver as part of a military occupation. And in Denver, you had the same type of a situation where you had a flying wedge of riot police who were clearing the streets of everybody, an undifferentiated mass of protesters, people who were simply observers, media people, business people, and this is all done with a great indifference to the question of who was actually involved in protests. And the other thing I want to point out, by way of showing the mindset here, in Denver, the riot police actually circulated a T-shirt that had on its front a caricature of some hypertrophied, steroidally enhanced goon wearing the outfit of a riot police, of a riot policeman, and wearing all the regalia and all the accoutrements, and carrying a baton and carrying pepper spray and a firearm and so forth, rising ominously over the skyline of Denver. And the caption said, "We wake up early to beat the crowds." This was distributed for the riot police who were involved in providing what was called security for the Democratic National Convention.
But don't you really think that there's a conscious, organized effort to turn the police against the people and the people against the police? It's the old idea of divide and conquer. They know exactly what they're doing, because the one thing they fear is that the police and the people will be on the same side.
Yeah, that's certainly one thing they fear, and that's really, I hate to use the expression I just used a couple of minutes ago by way of expressing disapproval, but there really is sort of a fait accompli here, because there has been a generational change in the attitudes and composition of law enforcement. There's just no way of getting around that. But there is an organized effort, I believe, to create within certain elements of law enforcement, certainly within federal law enforcement, elite elements within the military, an attitude that these people are abstracted from and in some way superior to the common mass of citizens, and that they're that much closer to the ruling oligarchy, and hence they're sort of a Praetorian class. And I think what's happening is that within law enforcement itself, and this is something that I've been exploring with some people who are in law enforcement right now, I'm going to be writing about this subject and doing some programs, not only for the radio, but hopefully for the Internet, for broadcast on the Internet on this subject. Within law enforcement, there is a real sense of a shakeout now, where you have traditionalist people who are constitutionally minded and who have the mindset of peace officers rather than military occupation troops. These people find themselves isolated and on the outs with the dominant elements within the police itself. These people don't really gravitate to the conceits of the increasingly militarized law enforcement bodies that they belong to. They've had the ground shift under their feet. They've seen the culture change around them. Many of them find themselves either isolated or professionally cut off. And it would be very worthwhile to get a lot of these people, the ones that I can't on record talking about that.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back. William, you go right ahead.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Excellent series where John Adams defends the British troops who are hated by the public, but John Adams defends them because he believes in the law and he's able to get the most of the troops off, from their charges of murder. So pick up the story there.
The point I was going to make about the Boston Massacre was that these troops were put on trial for crimes against the public, against the American colonists, who had, of course, the rights, the due process rights of English citizens, although those rights were being abused by the government of Great Britain. Now, what's happening today in the United States, despite the fact that we have a written constitution, which is really unexcelled in terms of the specific guarantees of individual liberties and the procedural guarantees that are supposed to impose accountability on the people who rule us, and they shouldn't rule us, they should be representatives who act in our stead. In spite of all the advantages we have of living in a republic with a constitution, it's becoming more and more the case that there is this official impunity which clothes people who are involved in activities of the sort that we saw in Pittsburgh here in terms of law enforcement and paramilitary efforts at law enforcement that you didn't have even under the colonial occupation that took place when America was still subject to the British Empire. I wrote a piece about 10 years ago talking about what happened with the Randy Weaver case and how Monhoriuchi, the fellow who murdered, there's no sense in minimizing or clouding by euphemism what happened here to Sandy Weaver and what happened actually what happened to Vicky Weaver. Vicky Weaver was the one who was murdered by Monhoriuchi. He was swaddled in something called, I'm trying to remember, functional immunity is the generic title for it. It's a type of sovereign immunity in which somebody who does something that is manifestly a crime as part of a government initiative is considered to be immune from prosecution unless he consents to be prosecuted or the government agency he works for, the accountable national command level leader of that agency consents for the person to be subject to criminal or civil liabilities. You didn't have that in the case of Captain Preston and the others who were involved in the shootings that we now call the Boston Massacre. And that really is a contrast here because however tyrannical King George and his ministry for the Americas might have been, and they certainly were tyrannical, they had really bad ambitions for the management of the Americas and the future of the American colonists. We've seen the system under which we're living now ripen to such an extent that it really makes King George and his cronies look like paragons of reason and proportionality compared to what's going on right now. And that really is an ominous and sobering thing, I believe, and it's not something that's partisan. I certainly wish that the people now who spent 8 years chafing under the rule of George W. Bush, who support Barack Obama because he supposedly represents a change, and all he represents change in, quite frankly, would be the cosmetics of what's going on. He's a more affable and more anodyne personality. He speaks in complete sentences. He has a good family life. He's the sort of a person who might be sort of fun to sit down and talk with. He seems like a personable and decent fellow, except for the fact he's a raging collectivist who has no respect for the Constitution, and he's presiding over the final evisceration of what remains of our financial health and our liberties. The thing is, many people gravitate toward him because he represents something in their minds that is worthwhile in terms of change. But he's surrounded by the same group of cronies, and he's carrying on the same basic policies. He's visibly and obviously tuning up the atmosphere now for a war against Iran, and because he's been able to get the international cooperation now on the assumption that it's a joint venture involving people such as France, it's likely that we'll end up going to war with Iran. It would be because of the nuclear program, in all likelihood. It's because they've gone off the dollar, the petrodollar standard. They're charging for... they're receiving, rather, euro instead of dollars at the Iranian oil bourse. And that's the same kind of thing that Saddam Hussein was talking about doing in 2000. He wanted to go off at the petrodollar standard and do something different, maybe involving yen. And see, this is all going on right now, and people don't have depth perception because they're used to looking at a one-partisan eye or the other at current events. I wish people would open both eyes and take a look at it with depth of field and understand that we're seeing the same policies, irrespective of the personalities that are promoting them. And those policies prefigure the end of America as an independent country and the end of our relatively prosperous middle-class civilization and the reduction of everybody into a form of serfdom. And I can't believe that even the people who are blinkered Democratic pro-Obama partisans would really have an appetite for that kind of thing unless they really think that there's something to be said for sharing equally in unalloyed misery. Hopefully they aspire to something better than that for our country.
Well, I think that most people have no idea what's going on. I'm sure that Iran has nuclear weapons. We've known since the 1990s they have purchased several bombs. And, of course, we've given them the ability to build others. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is Friday evening. You can tell it's Friday because William Grigg is here for the last hour. Go right ahead, William.
Well, you may have heard a little bit of incidental business in the background. I was just checking to see if my second son, Isaiah, was back from the homecoming game tonight. He attended the birthday party, and he was out with some friends sort of late. And I was just checking to make sure he was all right. I work out of my home here in Payette, Idaho, and so every once in a while my family life is going to intrude in our political discussions. So I hope that's okay.
It's perfectly all right. You have to attend to the family life. We appreciate your willingness to spend time with us.
If you have to go do
something, you do it, and we'll cover until you get back.
Everything's fine right now. I appreciate that. And it's a real blessing and a privilege to be with you. I wanted to talk a little bit about this monstrous communique, both in terms of size and also in terms of content. It was put out here by the G20. Once again, it's so significant that they've expanded the G8 into the G20 because that means that they're bringing the United States and the Anglosphere, the United States, Britain, the other elements of the former Commonwealth, down to a more general level. They're really leveling us down with the rest of the world. That, of course, is a long-term objective of the people who created the architecture of what we now call the New World Order. They wanted to level us down to sort of a general realm of mediocrity, economically and otherwise, with the rest of the world. And the G20, of course, the fact that this is now going to be the presidium of the world economy is a really potent illustration of that. I love the way that these people act as if by pronouncing success, success is a tangible thing. When last we gathered in April, we confronted the greatest challenge to the world economy in our generation. Global output was contracting at a pace not seen since the 1930s. Trade was plummeting. Jobs were disappearing rapidly. Our people worried that the world was on the edge of a depression. Note the use of the past tense here. At that time, our countries agreed to do everything necessary to ensure a recovery, to repair our financial systems, and to maintain the global flow of capital. It worked. Point 5 of this communique is that the so-called stimulus worked. That's stated as a fact. The policy of this presidium is to say that it is a fact that this coordinated global inflation worked and rescued the economy. This is now considered indisputable. This is considered as much a fact as the Pythagorean theorem in terms of the way that this would impact policy, or the impact this would have on policy. Our forceful response helped to stop the dangerous sharp decline in global activity and stabilize financial markets.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment with William Grigg. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Sidney Williams going over the communique that came out of the G20. Now, for our listeners out there, they hold these meetings, and they're all fluff and all sorts of warm things. The real decisions are made behind the scenes by the invisible people who rule the world, and you have your demonstrations, and you have your police, and you have your pepper spray, and you have your military there in Pittsburgh. But this is all show bits. The really important things decided ahead of time. Now, William says there's about a 20-page directive that's come back that is going to stress creation of this new international order, which is what it's really all about. This is why the people, our invisible government, created this whole financial crisis to bring down the whole world economy, to force all the nations of the world into this new international order, as Henry Kissinger said in this classic article published on the 12th of January of this year in the New York Times, titled A Chance for a New World Order. He said that the world has two choices, the nations of the world. It's either join this new international order or chaos. And who's going to pick chaos? Well, anyway, before we go on, William, I'd like you to go ahead and get your web page out, get your information on how people can listen to your radio programs, and then we'll get back to this directive that came out.
All right. I appreciate that. My web page, my blog, as it's called, is called Pro Libertate. It's a Latin phrase that means for freedom. It's accessible at freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Freedom in our time is one run-on word, one compound word, if you will. freedominourtime.blogspot.com. Or you go to willgrigg.com, which is, once again, sort of a shell website for a lot of things I'm involved in. Look at the right-hand side of the page. There's a list of hyperlinks. Pro Libertate, the blog, is the very first link on that page. My radio show is also called Pro Libertate Radio. It's broadcast on the Liberty News Radio Network. For those of you who are living in a region of the country where Liberty News Radio Network is not available through terrestrial radio, it is available on the web at libertynewsradio.com. You can listen to it by way of live streaming. There's just a dozen or so live streaming options available through this website. Or you can go to the archives at libertynewsradio.com/shows, and you can listen to the archived programs from my show, which is on from 5 o'clock, no, forgive me, in my time zone, is on from 6 o'clock to 7 o'clock. We're in the mountain time zone. California time is 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock, or 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock central. But you can go to the website and hear the archives of my programs. I'm on for an hour every weeknight, and all the other programs from all the other hosts are available in the archives as well. I should point out that I find something useful in every single one of the shows that is broadcast. There are a couple of hosts who have opinions that diverge from mine dramatically on some issues, including some very important ones. But that doesn't mean I don't find them worthwhile in terms of many of the other things they say. I can disagree with them about certain points as long as, for the most part, our principles line up. Even when our principles don't line up perfectly, I'm willing to listen to what somebody has to say, because only by listening to what somebody has to say am I going to become more intelligent. So it's libertynewsradio.com. I should point out that Sam Bushman, who's the fellow who organized this network, is a remarkable man. He invented the audio software that we use to simulcast this program over the Internet, which is just a wonderful asset. I can literally do the program here out of my office in a small house in Payette, Idaho. And Mr. Bushman has a program of his own called Liberty Roundtable that's also worth listening to. And so if you go to libertynewsradio.com, you'll be able to listen to Pro Libertate anytime you want to, basically, through the archives. And check out the other shows. They're all worth listening to. And that pretty much is the sum and substance of what I'm up to. You mentioned, Dr. Stan, that I'm working on some other book projects. I am. I've got at least two book projects that I'm deeply involved in, but owing to the move and some other things that have been going on, my family just moved into a larger house here in Fayette that provided me with the long overdue and much appreciated blessing of an office, something I didn't have before. I was having to do my work out of either a bedroom or a little corner of the living room in our old house. Now I actually have an office. But owing to that and some other things that have happened, I've had to put some of these things in cold storage, as it were, hold them in abeyance. And as soon as I have some more news on any of the book projects I'm involved in, I promise I'll let you know. Hopefully by the time we get together on the 25th of next month, I'll have some news on at least one of those projects.
Great. Well, I hope you have your plane reservations lined up, because we don't want you to get trapped up there and be able to get
down. I've got my travel arrangements all made.
All right. Very good. Well, go right ahead.
I was talking about some of the elements of this demented communique that was put out now for the G20 meeting. Just very briefly, I lost track of a dozen United Nations and UN-organized international conferences and forums and summits. And they're really quite sterile exercises, because by the time the celebrities get together, the political celebrities assemble, the heads of state or the chief executives or their delegates get together to go through the ceremonial process of agreeing to a document, or signing a document, or issuing a communique, everything has been done except for the finishing touches, the finishing work on communiques that are already in substance and most of the details worked out. Platforms, programs of action, communiques, these are all things that are put together by bureaucratic gnomes who work tirelessly. I think they get paid by the syllable, because most of what they put out displays such antic, manic prolixity as to be unreadable unless you're somebody who is weaned on the works of Leon Trotsky or the speeches of Fidel Castro. If you've got that type of tolerance for windy blatherskites, then you could probably get through a lot of this material. But this G20 summit communique is remarkable because of the brazenness, the dishonesty here. They're talking about the idea that the coordinated stimulus worked. I mean, Barack Obama, peace be upon him, forgive me, I should be careful about how I take his holy name to my lips, I suppose, when he made a public statement at the forum, said, "We've brought the global economy back from the brink." Now, of course, this is not only counterintuitive, but it also runs counter to all of the leading economic indicators, with the exception of the stock market, which is, of course, grotesquely overinflated right now because they're playing around with funny money given to them by the Fed. The Fed has been goosing the stock market for over a year now. It shouldn't surprise us that the stock market, having been goosed, is going to respond by climbing up to unrealistic heights, completely unwarranted heights, given what's going on in the job market, given what's going on with consumer spending. Consumers are retracting and retrenching. That's a very intelligent thing to do. That's because people are being thrown out of work. The actual unemployment rate, according to Paul Craig Roberts, he's a former Treasury official under Ronald Reagan, if you calibrated the unemployment rate as it was calibrated before the Reagan administration, the actual unemployment rate right now is almost the same as it was during the depth of the Great Depression. It's around 20%. It doesn't register that high, according to the metrics which are used right now, because they don't count people who have been out of work for a year and have given up looking for work. They find ways of adjusting their metrics in other ways, not only with respect to inflation, but also with respect to the question of how many people are quote-unquote underemployed. I mean, you were considered functionally unemployed, for instance, if you were working a part-time job that was not enough to keep you financially secure and stable. But the way it works right now, somewhere between 16 and 20% of the workforce is out of work right now. And so if this is back from the brink, you're dealing here with a different vocabulary and a different contour of reality than the rest of us are acquainted with. The G20 communique reflects that same arrogant certitude that by expressing something desirable, that desirable thing materializes. It says, our country has agreed to do everything necessary to ensure recovery, to repair our financial systems, and to maintain the global flow of capital. It worked. Our forceful response helped to stop the dangerous sharp decline in global activity. our financial institutions are raising needed capital. No, they're not. They're not raising needed capital. They're receiving funny money from the Fed. That is to say, the Federal Reserve is simply exhalating what it's pleased to call money and giving it to these financial institutions by way of central banks and politically connected banks here in the United States. Financial markets are showing a willingness to invest and lend, and confidence has improved. Well, no, confidence has not improved. If you take a look at consumer confidence, it's very, very low, and appropriately so. Number 10, item number 10 on this communique, we pledge today to sustain our strong policy response until a durable recovery is secured. We will act to ensure that when growth returns, jobs do too. Okay, let me explain something here very quickly. Government does not create jobs. Government does not create anything worthwhile. On my radio show, I have said on a couple of occasions, I've probably said it here, that the only thing the government can actually make would be criminals out of innocent people and corpses out of what were living human beings. It cannot make wealth. It cannot really create jobs. All it can do is redistribute the effort that is put into a given enterprise by private people. You know, government is in the business of redistribution of wealth. It shouldn't be in that business. It should be solely and exclusively in the business of protecting our rights. But when government gets involved in the supposedly creative enterprise, all it's doing is stealing from one area of the economy. There's no aggregate gain. There's no aggregate benefit here. So they can't ensure that jobs will come back. All they can do, if they wanted to bring about that happy result, would be simply to stop meddling in the economy and let it heal itself. To continue, we will avoid, this is a key point, we will avoid any premature withdrawal of stimulus. So what they're saying, basically, is that they are going to continue to inflate, and they're going to do so in a coordinated fashion with the 20 member nations that are now constituents of the G20. Number 15, our framework for strong, sustainable, and balanced growth is a compact. A compact is an agreement that commits us to work together to assess how our policies fit together, to evaluate whether they are collectively consistent with more sustainable and balanced growth, and to act as necessary to meet our common objectives. Think about this for a second. The United States of America, until the creation of the United Nations and the first attempt to create a World Trade Organization, the Global Trade Organization, was going to be created under, once again, the stewardship of Alger Hiss back in, I believe it was 1947 in Havana, Cuba. At the time, the proposed Global Trade Organization foundered in the Senate because nobody wanted to put our country in a position where our economic future would be defined by an assembly of international bureaucrats and foreign leaders. What this communique says is that that is our economic reality right now, that the policies of the government ruling us and the Federal Reserve, which is actually in charge of our monetary system, that they are going to work in coordination with these other members of the G20 nations to ensure that we have, how do I put it here, that there are policies that are collectively consistent with more sustainable and balanced growth. Of course, those are catchphrases, those are buzzwords, and act as necessary to meet our common objectives. There's nothing here about looking out for the financial or economic interests of the American people. And this mantra, strong, sustainable, and balanced growth, is repeated throughout this document in incantory fashion. It's almost as if it's some kind of a black mass where this is a liturgical phrase that's being chanted in antiphony as part of a religious exercise so insistently is it repeated here. Let's see, number 17, we are committed to act together to raise capital standards to implement strong international compensation standards. Strong international compensation standards means basically global wage controls on people in the financial services industry. That's going to be done now internationally according to the G20 communique. Ending practices that lead to excessive risk-taking, there's nothing wrong with taking risks as long as you reap the benefit or you pay the penalty. What they're talking about, of course, or they should be talking about is moral hazard, where you subsidize risks and then you socialize failure. That's, of course, what got us into this mess to begin with, but they've already admitted that they're going to stay in that business. That's what the stimulus is all about. You find the worst and most corrupt financial institutions in the world where so-called risk-taking was being subsidized and then cushioned when failure would ensue with tax dollars and wealth that's confiscated from the people either through taxation or through inflation. that's what created the situation where you had the Bear Stearns and you had the Lehman Brothers and you had what happened with AIG and what happened with Goldman Sachs. They're not talking about ending that. They're talking about ending risk-taking. Risk-taking, of course, is what the word entrepreneurship means. An entrepreneur is somebody who takes risks. That's not the sort of thing we should be discouraging. We should be encouraging more of that, because only by doing that are we actually going to have economic growth and productivity. Let's see, 18, to reform the global architecture to meet the needs of the 21st century, that's one of the things they're pledging to do. After this crisis, critical players need to be at the table and fully vested in our institutions to allow us to cooperate to lay the foundation for strong, sustainable, and balanced growth. What they mean by institutions, of course, are the institutions of international governance, of which the G20 is a part. It is a step to the side, distant cousin to the United Nations. They're creating an architecture that intersects with the United Nations in various ways. Barack Obama just recently, for the first time, actually, I should say, Barack Obama was the first U.S. president to chair a meeting of the Security Council for the purpose, once again, of sort of laying the framework for a potential multilateral military strike on Iran. He's getting us, he and his administration, with the help of the Congress, are getting us more and more deeply entangled, once again, with these institutions of international governance to the United Nations. That's part of the general framework that was agreed upon here at the G20. Let's see here. Point number 23 is also fascinating. We need to work together to make the policy and institutional changes needed to accelerate the convergence of living standards and productivity in developing and emerging economies to the level of the advanced economies. Okay. You never
level up. But the question is, are they going to raise everybody's living standards to the American living standards, or are they planning on lowering the living standards of the United States to that of the other nations? In other words, they want them level, but how are they going to level them?
Well, you can't level up. If you're in the government, you don't level up, you level down. You don't encourage the proverbial rising tide that lifts all boats. That's something that happens, of course, the productive sector. Government's not productivity. Government is pure consumption. All it can do is level down. So what they're talking about here, when they talk about convergence of living standards, is what's called downward harmonization. You can actually see that phrase in trade literature talking about what happened with respect to NAFTA and CAFTA and these other managed trade treaties. They're not free trade agreements. Don't get the idea they have anything to do with free trade. They're talking about the downward harmonization of living standards, where the United States is being dragged down to the level of, say, Mexico or some of the poor constituent members of the European Union, rather than frame those other economies so that they can rise to a more suitable level that would be better for the inhabitants of those countries. Let's see here. The framework for strong, sustainable, balanced growth very quickly. In the short run, we must continue to implement our stimulus programs to support economic activity until the recovery has clearly taken hold. Then it talks about we need to work together as we manage the transition to a more balanced pattern of global growth. This is a global planned economy they're talking about. It's by no means a coincidence that woven into every element of this monstrous communique is the same radical environmental assumptions we see in the cap and trade tax that's being imposed upon us. It's all quite monstrous.
It's all about bringing about this new international order. This is why they created intentionally and maliciously the financial collapse that's impoverishing our people. We'll be back in just a moment.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your two-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
Well, you know, America is changing, but most of the changes that are taking place seem to be designed to take away our freedom. And what can you do to remedy the current situation? Well, you can become informed, and one of the best ways to become informed is to subscribe to Republic Magazine, because that magazine provides the information that's suppressed in most other news magazines. If you want to oppose the effort to establish a one-world government, if you want to preserve freedom here in the United States and throughout the world, I suggest you subscribe to Republic Magazine, and you can do that by calling 1-800-873-1620. That's 800-873-1620, or access their website at www.republicmagazine.com. That's republicmagazine.com. I suggest you get extra copies for your family and your friends.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 25th of September 2009 Power Hour program. We made it to Friday. Oh, my goodness. They didn't really make it, though, in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We'll talk about that in a little while. Terrorist busts all over the country. That's what we're hearing. Now all the bad guys are being caught at one time. It sounds a little bit strange. And the beauty stores are where they got the bad guys caught. And how do they do that? Well, it's with a few items that are only available at beauty stores. I didn't even know they were available there, but these bad guy terrorists did. I don't know. I just don't like the feeling that I have surrounding this whole story about catching these terrorist bad guys. We're going to be talking today with Ron McDonald and Dr. Robert Rowan about they own us. They own everything. How do they do it? How do they put us into this system? How did it happen? We're going to talk with them about that. And also we're going to touch on their section in the book, They Own It All, Including You. We're going to touch on the IRS today as to how they're able to do that. Then we need to talk about China's coming derivative default. How bad is the financial system going to be? And, of course, we had the G20 meeting this week. That has caused tremendous unrest from the anarchist. What's going to happen with respect to our currency? Is there going to be a currency change? It was sort of talked about at the G20 meeting. And I have to tell you, the G20 meeting didn't look like any tea party, did it? Those of you who have seen the clips, and I am going to play just a little bit of the sound bite because I want you all to hear just how piercing it was. How scary it is. It sets you on edge just to hear what was going on there, which sounds like a dry run for a mass march. I am sorry to have to say that, but this whole thing looks orchestrated, created, manipulated, and it looks like practice. Practice for when the Tea Party people get just a little bit out of hand. Also, it appears now that there is a naval ship that is quarantined. I'd like to have more first-hand information on this. Several people are reporting on this. Dr. Truot is one of them that is saying that, yes, there is a quarantined naval ship and many of the people on board are sick, but they're sick because they got the swine flu shot. They're continuing with this idea of we don't have enough vaccine, we don't have enough vaccine, we don't have enough vaccine. At the same time, don't let that fool you. When they get ready to give it, they will have plenty. Now, is the swine flu problem over with? Looks like it to us. But they're keeping the fear going. They're keeping the propaganda going. And it probably is going to be the next one that's going to come out of nowhere, surprise everybody, and they're going to say, well, we're just going to have to give the swine flu vaccine. That's all we've got right now. There's all kinds of options that could happen, ladies and gentlemen. We don't know. Did you hear about the Bank of America bank that will not fly the American flag? Oh, I know our webmaster, Gary Robinson, is up in the air over this one. Bank of America will not fly the American flag. I want you to hear the reason that they say they will not do this. We are going to touch on this G20 meeting quite a bit because it looks like it was so totally manipulated. I can't believe that it was really people like you and me that were there. Remember that, remember in Connecticut when they had that big taking of land there, property. They were going to do it for urban renewal. They were going to do it for whatever reasons that they said they were. We're going to touch on that and find out what happened to all that land that was taken by the homeowners under the guise of, well, for the greater good. And